Bismillahi rahmani rahim wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam. Peace and love, everybody. I'm Brother Ali, and this is the Travelers Podcast. Thank you for being here. If you're new here, and I think that there might be some people that are new to the show this week, because my guest, Sean Evans, and his show, Hot Ones, have just become mainstream fixtures in culture. You know, the internet's a big place, and everybody clicks on different stuff. So if you don't know about Hot Ones, Sean started with this idea years ago where he brings on musicians and comedians and actors and creatives and people that are in culture, and they sit together and eat 10 hot wings that get increasingly hot. And no matter what your tolerance for hot food is, by the time you get to that 10th wing, it's just beyond anybody's ability to bear it, except for Sean himself. You see something very human and very relatable in the person. And in this time when so much of culture and so much, especially on the internet, so much time is just dedicated to really reaching the broadest base of people by connecting on our lowest common denominators, Sean and his partner stuck to their guns and their show became a household name. And there's a huge overlap in the two shows because I'm an underground independent hip hop artist. That's how Sean and I connected. And you'll hear that he grew up listening to the music that me and my friends made and coming to our shows. And we came out in the late 90s and early 2000s with a very specific brand of hip hop music that cut against the grain when the mainstream world was really only focusing on the certain aspect of hip hop that celebrated excess and violence and crime, which is just one part of what hip hop is, but that's what was being celebrated. In that time, me and my friends came along on an underground independent thing, and we made music that was based on our lives and our experiences as human beings and sampling musical soundscapes that are outside the norm and really focusing on songwriting and throwing great concerts, but approaching it as musicians. And we had varying degrees of success. So somebody like LP came out of that movement from Run the Jewels, and Tech N9ne and Atmosphere touring all over the world and being able to just sell out these venues all over the place. So I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've been able to connect with all of my heroes, both in music and culture and thought leaders and spiritual masters. I'm a convert to Islam. My family and I live in Istanbul, Turkey, and I've traveled all over the world sitting with these great people. So on this podcast, I connect with these incredible people that I've met along the way and that I share life with. Hip hop icons like Chuck D and Pharoah Monch. And then my cohort of artists, people like Slug from Atmosphere and Immortal Technique and Vinny Paz and Ari the Rugged Man and Merce. And I've talked to my comedian friends like Hassan Minhaj and Mo Amer and Amanda Seals, and also thought leaders like Dr. Cornel West. We talked to Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, and we've had authors and therapists and all of the people that I love and that I learn a lot from. But the message and the idea is that we're co-travelers in the journey of life. And the music and the books and the therapy and the politics and the spirituality and the religion are all amazing windows into the human experience that we're all trying to navigate. We've been sponsored from day one by the Zakat Foundation. Z-A-K-A-T is the pillar of Islam that is about giving back, and it's about charity. It's about sharing. And Zakat Foundation is a global humanitarian organization that works all over the world. And they're people that I know and trust. They work with the people on the ground. They don't just drop in and dump money in places so that they can take pictures and leave and sometimes cause greater problems. So if you go to Zakat US on social media, you can follow them and see all the dope stuff that they do all over the world. But if you go to zakat.org, zakat.org, you can put a little money down on the stuff that they do and know that it actually reaches the people in the communities. All of it is really dope and it's very real. And these are people that I know and trust. And we have some other really dope things that we want to share with you, but we'll tell you about that later. Enjoy this conversation with my man, Sean Evans from Hot Ones. How are you, brother?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Man, I'm so happy to see you.
I'm happy to see you. It's nice to hear your voice. Nice to meet you.
It's crazy. I feel like I already know you.
I love that.
You know what I mean?
I know.
It's funny, when we first started, me and my wife started watching Hot Ones really early, like, you know, really early. And I remember saying to my wife, I'm like, this seems like a guy that would be at our shows. Like, he's from the Midwest. He's from Chicago, the right age. There's something about that bomber jacket and the way he's talking. I'm like, man, I guarantee I guarantee this guy is part of our musical extended family.
I was,
and so we were just 100%. Watching for years, and I always knew it. And then we saw when Lizzo was on, you asked about, you know what I mean? What's it like coming from the same city as Atmosphere and Brother Ali? And I was like, man, I knew it.
Well, you know, you're 100% right to have those instincts. I was totally, I remember in high school, we would go to shows all the time at places like the Abbey, places like Fireside Bowl, which was like this bowling alley that they turned into like a punk club at night. You know, like the bigger shows, we'd go to the Metro, and we would just take these trips all of the time. And then music discovery was so different back then than the way it is now. Like, that's how you discovered new music, was by just going to all of these different shows. And then that was such a good moment and wave, I felt like, for the underground hip hop scene at that time. And I just remember, yeah, Shadows on the Sun being like a soundtrack to my summer, my junior year of high school. And it was just a lot of fun and a lot of good memories. And when I think back on it now, probably the time that I was most interested and enthusiastic about new music. So thank you for that.
That's so dope, man. That's really, really dope. Yeah, because, you know, then we've just spent hours of watching you with some of our favorite public people and even people that we don't necessarily care for, and just seeing them in a new light, seeing them in a really good light with you. You know what I'm saying?
I love hearing that.
So that's a really, really beautiful thing, man.
Thank you, man. Well, then it's all love here.
So did you grow up in Chicago?
So I grew up, I was born in Evanston, which is the first city north, and then grew up and went to high school mostly a little bit further northwest of that in Crystal Lake, Illinois. So we just road trip down I-90, like almost every, you know, we do it on school nights all the time, you know, like that was kind of like, it felt kind of cool to break away from the suburbs, go down to the city and then be in some dark club and staying out late. And it was just the best of times, really. But yeah, that's got, so I had a quintessential sort of suburban Chicago experience growing up.
Yeah. And did you always have media and journalism as part of your, like, was that what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Yeah, exactly. So I was definitely weird in that I was really into David Letterman late night. I loved Howard Stern. There was a call-in radio show on Q101 called Loveline, hosted by Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew, that was appointment viewing for me every single night from 10 to 12. I was listening to Loveline. And Jimmy Kimmel, especially early on in that time, was a huge influence on me. So those were all kind of my heroes growing up. And then I ended up going to the University of Illinois with a degree in broadcast journalism. So there was always a part of me that felt like I could do what I'm doing now, but it's not like you just graduate and get a TV show the way that, you know, you'd get an accounting degree and then go work for PricewaterhouseCooper or whatever, you know? So after college, I was a copywriter. I was doing architecture tours of the Chicago River and Lake Michigan. I would always do just freelance magazine work and be sort of a satellite person that they could go to for an interview in Chicago, and was always just like submitting stuff to Complex. And then in 2015, when every media company, every magazine is like, we got to pivot to video. I was doing some stuff out at All-Star Weekend in New Orleans. I had interviews lined up with like 2 Chainz, Snoop Dogg, a bunch of NBA players. And at that time, Complex was like, hey, can we put these interviews that were supposed to be in print, can we put these on video, just literally because we need videos on our YouTube channel? And I was like, yes, please do that. That would be so awesome. So went down there, did that. I think it went pretty well. I was super nervous about it, but I think it went pretty well. Then not long after that, just a few weeks, Complex called me up, offered me a job. I sold all my I got rid of my apartment in Chicago, quit my job, moved to New York like 30 days later, working in the magazine office for a year and a half when I met Chris Schoenberger, who was the GM of First We Feast. He was in a similar situation. We got to pivot to video. We were in this magazine office, so we'd see celebrities walk in the halls all the time. So we were like, maybe we can do a celebrity interview show. Maybe it's viable just because of our proximity to it. And then, you know, we needed a food angle because it's a food brand. And then the biggest thing, we were like, well, celebrity interview shows are boring. How do we make them not boring? And Chris has solved for that. He's like, you know, well, what if we had celebrities eat increasingly spicy chicken wings over the course of the interview as a way to break them down? And that was just a Cupid's arrow into my brain. We shot the pilot with Tony Yeo. And then here we are 8.5 years later, still doing it. So that's kind of the origin story from way back day one all the way to now.
It's an incredible story, man. You know, the format of the show really sticks with me. And I think the reason that we keep coming back to it is because it's so humanizing. And it's like such a universal human experience that most of the time when we see these people, you know, whether it's like, you know, rappers that are being really cool or people who want to be really insightful or whatever, like the second something physically starts happening to them, that we've all had that experience of eating something that's spicier than we expected to be. Yeah. There are things that happen in your body that make it so that you have to be authentic. You have no choice.
Yeah.
You know 100%. What I mean? And so there's something that you just are really getting to a very human experience with them that's not degrading, that's not demoralizing. You're not seeing the worst of who they are. There's something really endearing about it. And, you know, in a time when so much of media is really built and fueled by, you know, gossiping and talking about the worst of people and casting judgment on people and arguing and all this kind of stuff, this like really nasty stuff, there's something so humanizing about watching a musician that you think is kind of whack or a public person that you think is corny, and to see the way that they have to become real, and you empathize with them.
Yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like 100%. You automatically, like your heart goes out to this person, like, man, I know that feeling. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
It's such a beautiful format, man.
Oh, thank you so much. And a lot of what you hit on is so poetic, and you said it in such a poetic way, of course you would. But it's exactly how I think about the show. You know, like to break down the beginning part, you know, you can't put up that facade that you put up typically in an interview. You can't be in that flight pattern because the hot sauce disrupts it, right? So there is that moment where that happens. But then it's also a very vulnerable experience. And you're right. Like we all know what it's like to eat something that's just way too spicy for us. You know what I mean? And what that feels like. And then too, it's a TV show and it has this added bonus of also being kind of entertaining. Like when you and your friends, you know, I just think about me and like my buddies and eating things that are way too spicy and just cracking up all around the table. So then it's also entertaining on that. But it also, as you said, kind of turns everything upside down, you know, because in addition to like everyone understanding that celebrities, public figures, you know, being on stage, it's like an exalted place, you know, it's like by definition, an unobtainable lifestyle, you know, and that's why it's like interesting to people, but we're all human. So what it ends up doing is taking people who are typically on that pedestal and then knocking them down to a level that everyone understands. And that's why I think you end up walking away. It's like, I didn't want to like that person. And now I like that person. You know what I mean? And if we can do that, I think that that's kind of a beautiful thing. Cause as you were saying, again, the media landscape is so cynical.
Yes.
And so to be kind of a light in that, and like you were saying, focused on gossip, like all of these things, that's all so true. And I think that those things are at the expense of what actually makes these talented people interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. One of the episodes that I think really sparked something for is watching Nori.
Yeah.
You know, when Nori came in, he was so funny and he was so charismatic and he was really admiring and respecting where you were coming from. You know, and I think about like the Drink Champs concept in some ways is really similar.
Yeah.
But in some ways it's really not. Like, you know, there's a big difference between giving somebody a very visceral human experience and then asking them amazing questions.
Right.
Versus getting somebody liquored up and then getting them to spill all the juicy tea that
they slip. Yeah,
man. As much as we love and admire Kanye, there's something about the fact that his most challenging moments for everybody who loves watching him and has admired him for so long were on that particular platform.
Right. That was kind of the first domino.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And so I'm very curious about how intentional it feels like you've had to be very intentional about like, we're not going into gossip. We're not going into controversial areas. You know, I know even us like trying to launch this podcast, I got 500,000 people following me on social media. But if I don't let people argue in my comment section, then Facebook is like, oh, we thought you were serious. You're just joking. You know right. what I'm saying? How intentional have you been? What's the language like?
Yeah.
What are the sacrifices that you're making to keep it this really beautiful human experience and not dip into those kind of murky territories?
Yeah. So, I mean, for one, we have this unique hot sauce hook. So like that can hook, like we don't need to bear trap anyone. You know what I mean? Like we don't need to try to like manufacture some sort of viral moment. They're kind of just baked into the show. That's first and foremost. But the thing I think is like a guiding principle is that we talk about how we want it to be the most comfortable, least comfortable interview. You know, like that's like kind of how we talk about it. Like we're having you jump through a lot of hoops, eating all of these wings. I think it's like kind of weird then if then we like set you up on top of that. You know, like that would just be something that for me would be hard to look in the mirror at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I also think that when you're an entertainment interviewer, the value of the interview is really up to the generosity of the person that you're talking to. Like, I'm sure you have different gears when you're talking to someone who you can tell is in touch and like understands, you know, like you'll make more of an effort to be more complete in what you're saying or whatever, because you'll recognize yeah. like it's a trust exercise and you're just automatically more trusting of the person if they have knowledge, background, expertise, yes. pedigree. You're like, yes. okay, this is a serious conversation. But then if you're like talking to some dipshit, then you have a complete different kind of shift on that.
Right.
You're like, I'm going to put up as much stock effort answers. As you do. Exactly. Stock, blah, right. blah, blah. Like
people are like, so how'd you get into rap?
Yeah. Oh, right. So it's like the quickest, like
read my Wikipedia page.
Exactly. Like what's the softest, quickest way that I can just get out of this thing? You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think about that confluence of things. And when you think about the confluence of things, it just makes sense to go in that direction. But more than anything, mm-hmm. I just think we're already so cranked up on all of those things, gossip, conjecture, the way that people share and trade information, the way that like rumors become giant narratives and the sort of internet age in which yeah. we're all under surveillance 24/7 and policing each other like all of the time. You know, like that whole thing, it's just so kind of gross to me. And celebrity only adds to that. Like it only adds gasoline to that whole ecosystem. So I recognize there's a white space for hot ones to just be kind of like shining and positive. You know, like I think like even the success of Ted Lasso, it's like, oh, there's like a positive figure in this space where like every TV show is otherwise about fucked up people doing fucked up things. You know, that's what I think. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you end up seeing over and over with these people is for most of them, the overwhelming majority, you see how resilient they are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And how much they commit to like, all right, man, we're doing this thing.
even with
as much pain as they may be in. And I think that that's something that people who have never, you know, and fame is such a relative thing, success is a relative thing, but anybody who's done what they are doing for long enough to be recognized for it, we all have this thing where like, when things get difficult, there's got to be something as a creative person, as a person who's just that level of commitment to like, man, all right, we're doing it. Let's go. You see that with almost everybody on the show. You know what I mean? To the point where when somebody gives up, like when Khaled gave up,
you know what I mean?
But even that was so hilarious. Like it was just incredible. No, this isn't giving up, brother. You know what I'm saying?
I gave up. Yeah, yeah. 100%. Well, I think there ends up this thing where you are kind of like engaged in the show, you know, where are people like trapped on the show and the only way to get off of the show is to make it to the end. And then I think you're right too, as an audience member, I think you automatically are like rooting for the person to get through. And so I think the energies are like passing through to each other. And then the person starts working and believing in themselves too. And then I do think I am a good, I'm holding your hand through
You're
it.
A guide.
We're going to make
You're
it.
A guide,
yeah, yeah,
man.
Yeah. Just like sort of positive.
It's like people that talk about their ayahuasca experiences.
Yeah,
like,
I'd be very
the right
good.
Guide, man.
I'd be a very good person to like coach you through a trip, I think. I think I just naturally have those kinds of skills.
Thank you. I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that the reason there's an audience for us to share these conversations with is that BK1, who's the producer of the podcast and was my DJ in the beginning part of my career, we spent years of our lives on the road, standing on whatever stage we could get on. Sometimes it would be 9,000 people sold out Red Rock. Sometimes it would be literally 9 people at a cowboy bar in Montana. It's the first hip hop show they've ever been to. And we poured our heart out every single day. Whatever we had been able to find inside of ourselves and channel through the music, we gave it to everybody every night, every opportunity that we had. And we were able to string together, because of that, enough people who had had a real experience, both with us and also with each other. You know what I'm saying? There's people that are just like, man, I've never seen somebody like this rap before. I've never heard music like this before. But people would stand in rooms, not only with us, but with each other. And so you'll get like a middle-aged dude, white dude from Kansas, and like a black or Arab or Pakistani Muslim couple, and they're all at a show together. Or you buy a CD or a record or a tape from those early shows on the merch table, and then you're driving around, if you're in the hood, if you're in the suburbs, if you're in the country, and you hear somebody else in their car playing a Brother Ali, like, you know that's not the radio. And you know that you could talk to that person and you actually have a connection with them. And there's a perspective that you share. And we were able to string together enough of those shows, and we kept the ticket prices accessible. We always kept the merchandise prices accessible. But stringing that all together meant that we built a community, and we also were able to support what we did. You know, we both have families and we have a crew of people that is part of what we do. And we want them to be able to support their families. And so it was a new thing, but it was also really direct, and it was easy to figure out, how do you bring enough people together so that we can really build a network, a community, a movement around this message and this music? And what I think the pandemic time taught us is, first of all, that society is so alienating that we need these connections more than ever. I'm very happy being a private person, but I'm also somebody that's been given a gift. Like, not everybody can stand or sit in a room and make everybody in that room have the same experience so that they bond together. That's a gift that not everybody has. And so even if I don't feel like doing it, my soul feels uneasy if I don't. Like, I need to be sharing. And the people that we have on as guests, I'm telling you, I know people at every single level of notoriety. All of them still need somebody to say, hey, how are you really doing? What does this actually mean to you? Never mind what everybody thinks it means. What's your intention? Why do you do it? This is what I see as beautiful about you, and I appreciate it. Thank you for sharing this with us. Doesn't matter how rich and famous and successful and popping you are, your heart is still really fed by having exchanges like that. And for the people that listen, it's extremely important to be able to hear these kind of like humanizing connections. And what we also learned during the pandemic is we shouldn't always depend on being in person, in physical space all the time. There's just so many different factors. But that also these forces of streaming services and platforms and social media, that they can be used for harm and they can be used for good. They say you have to put that stuff there because people who don't know where else to look, that's where they go. You have to be there for them. But for the people who genuinely connect with what we're doing, we're building our online community that we call the Caravan. You go to brotherali.com in the join section, and you'll see that there are a couple different levels that you can jump in. The first one is $5 a month. When you sign up for that one, you're automatically entered into this space where you're able to send me questions. And I do regular Ask Me Anything questions where people have really serious stuff that they want to ask me about, whether it's something from their personal lives or something that I've said or not said or done. There are things that people are like, man, I really feel you, but we don't agree about this. And there's really space for people to disagree and see things differently and still be able to learn a lot from each other. That's in a lot of ways been the story of my life and my career. So at that $5 level, you get in and you have the Ask Me Anything episodes. There's also a growing catalog of rare and unreleased and exclusive music, videos, performances, speeches, podcast conversations that are in that space that are really special to me, that are really dope. And some things just aren't for everybody. There are certain things that, like, this is just for the people who understand the context of what's being said here. There's also a level called Trailblazers that's $100 a month. And that sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. And I really appreciate the people that do that. But in that area, we have a Slack community where there are people from different ages, different walks of life, different ethnic groups, different orientations that are in that group really sharing and doing life together. Also, the people that are in the caravan at all levels, they either get early access, the people at that $5 level. We do a lot of things that are meant to just be for a specific moment. So we got, you know, limited vinyl drops that we do that sell out right away. Because it's like, this isn't for everybody. I really love the idea of having intimate, connected communities that are sharing an experience together that not everybody has. So I love the fact that we're able to do it like this. Everybody can listen to the podcast. Everybody can stream the music. Not everybody has this 500 only pieces of vinyl that I designed. And not everybody is able to hear what I said when I was invited to speak in West Africa to a conference of Muslim elders. But for the people that really care about them and want to bond over these experiences and what they mean and what's behind them and what surrounds them, this is a really beautiful thing that we love to do. And the people at that upper tier, a lot of times when we do those records and stuff, a lot of times we just gift it to them. So go to brotherali.com in the join section, get down with the caravan, and know that you are still directly making this thing happen. All of the beauty and all the connections that are coming out of this are directly related to you because you're helping to support it just like you've done for years.
We just shot an episode, like less than an hour ago. I got home from the studio. And it was the 300th episode that we'd shot. Like, so that means that I've done it 300 times in the 21st season. So that's 3,000 wings over the course of this whole thing. So yeah, if I can make it here, like, don't worry, you're going to be okay with just the one or two more that we have left, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, obviously the wings is the obvious part of it, but man, you as an interviewer are one of the true greats of our time, man. Like, I think that
Thank you. The wings thing may overshadow that sometimes. Thank you.
But
thank
I mean, you. There's something in your state that's beyond the questions you're asking. Before you ask a single question, there's something in your state that you see that the most closed off people, the most, you know, usually you see some of these people in interviews and like, they never come alive, but they're immediately comfortable with you because you're immediately comfortable with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that something that you've always had? Is that a skill that you develop by doing it?
That's all so nice of you to say. You know, it's like so nice of you to say, and it means a lot more coming from you. And but I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't even know if I'm like good at it. You know, like sometimes I just think I'm like one of those artists who paints like the same landscape over and over and over again.
Bob Ross. Yeah.
Yeah, and like, maybe someday I'll get it just right, you know, but like, it's to me, it's kind of like the wax on, wax off of it all that I kind of like and appreciate. I love walking a mile in someone else's shoes, digesting it, and then creating some sort of run of show that you hope that they respond to in a positive way. And then just figure out if like this hopefully thoughtful career spanning interview translates to video in a way that like audiences are hungry for, you know, like, those are all the things that I think about, but I just like that process. I don't know if you're like this, but sometimes I can be like my own biggest critic and be like, oh, why did I do that or this? Or you know what I mean? Where maybe some other people wouldn't notice that, but you know, I see the flaws all the time in it. And I guess if there is one thing that I think I'm okay at is that I talk to everybody exactly the same.
Yes, you do.
I talk to little kids the same as I do to, you know, like everybody, I just talk to everybody exactly the same. So I think if there's some way in which I have an advantage over other people is that, listen, I never confuse my proximity to celebrity as like me being famous or me, you know what I think I'm just still the same kid from, you know, when I was living in the Midwest when I was 16, like mentally and emotionally, like I'm still that person. And then I just talk to everybody the same. And I think I'm never trying to like please anyone really. And I'm never trying to like kiss anyone's ass. And I'm not trying to do any of that. So I think that's maybe what makes it a little bit more comfortable off the bat. I think if there's something that kind of works for me in this job where we have to create a rhythm and a chemistry and a trust, even though we're meeting for the first time in the most bizarre of contexts with all these cameras and lights on us. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that I think if I look around and see how the sausage is made other places, that's where I think maybe I have an advantage.
I also just have to point out, man, you do not talk differently to Black people. You have the same voice, the same cadence, your vocabulary is the same, your pronunciation of words is the same. That's very rare
yeah,
for,
yeah.
for right. white hosts.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean? Yeah. Like some of my favorite I've podcasts, like the second Ice Cube or Ice T sits down, people are like, yeah, man, like their whole thing just, you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, just be yourself, please.
Like, yeah, I know. Yeah. No, like, I'd rather look like a square just being me than trying to do that. You know what I mean? Because that's the lamest thing.
Well, man, there's something deeply dehumanizing with white people in general, you know, that do that to people, but also in media. Like when somebody starts aiming their questions, they're like, here are black questions, or like, here's, you know,
yeah, right,
there's
right.
something just so limiting. And there's a really important, unspoken, intangible thing about you being the exact same person that like, hey, we're both just human beings. Like, hey, you're a full human being. I'm a full human being. That's all we need to connect with each other.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? There's something about that I think is, it just really oozes through in all of these interactions, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
that you're able to communicate with people in the hip hop space. And it's clear that, you know, your knowledge of hip hop is really also broad. A lot of people that came up in that early 2000s, you know, white dominant hip hop space didn't bother to listen to other hip hop.
Right.
A lot of people were just like, no, man, I know the good rap. I'm not listening to the
Lil Wayne. I loved rap music however it came from a really young age. And now that I look back on it, I think it was just like, I liked stories. Mm. Like I remember my mom explaining, I remember like sitting in the car and my mom explaining the Beach Boys in my room. And she's like, oh, it tells the story. And she told me like the story, you know, I don't know how young I was. And I was like, oh my God, like songs are stories. You know, like, so I remember that being like kind of a formative memory from a really, really, really young age. Mm-hmm. And then rap music, when I could first start to listen to it. Plus, I mean, I grew up like as a child of the 90s, it was just such a ridiculous, it was just such an amazing time to grow up in that genre. Yeah, but it was just like, I was like, oh my God, like the way the words, and then I could try to like figure out the meaning of the story. But it's just like hip hop to me just was like more of a narrative storytelling kind of like song thing. So that's what I think was like originally what I was interested in. And I think it was really a really formative and shaping thing for now, because we do obsess about like the rhythm and syntax of words and the way that we write interview questions and how it should hit the ear and how it should flow and all of that. And I wonder to what degree like those seeds being planted have kind of like helped in the way that we write interview questions now. So I think about that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. I'm friends with Nardwar.
Legend.
And he will find things about your life that people are just like, how did you, there's this amazing meme of him asking J. Cole, did you tell Dr. Dre about Kendrick? And it's just Cole for like 10 minutes, just like looking at everyone in the room, like, dude, nobody, you could just tell like nobody knew that, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
But there's a specificity with your questions where you hear people say all the time, that is a really great question, man.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, what's your process like with, first of all, the approach? At the beginning, at the onset, at like setting the intention for like, what's the interview that I want to deliver? What's the part of this person that I'm, is it a curiosity? Is it a deep affinity for the person?
Where
do you start and what's your way in with the interviews?
So that's, it really comes from a place of intellectual curiosity and then understanding how amazing my opportunity is. You know, like if I'm interviewing recording artists, movie stars, you know, like whatever, like, okay, so my day-to-day work is watching and absorbing movies and reading books and listening to music and being exposed to all of these things that I otherwise wouldn't be exposed to, you know, like, how amazing is that? Like, that's just an amazing job to have. So I actually really appreciate the legwork in all of that. And then once you kind of take all of that in, soak all of that in, see how much you can learn about the person, because then it's just more respectful of their time. You know what I mean? So to like go through, try to figure this all out, not kiss people's ass, but maybe in the question kind of gas them in the way that you think, you know, they like to be gassed and like all of those things and turn those knobs at like the right time, push, pull, crank lever, you know, be able to zig, be able to zag. And that's kind of how I approach the interview and the intention. And then I also kind of want to shout out to Nardwar, because I know I mentioned all of those people who are kind of formative, but it's impossible to deny his influence and what that means on the show. And I remember in college, just binging Nardwar interviews, just watching one after the other. And I remember, like, I used to always kind of run back those kinds of moments. You know, like if you see that originally in the J. Cole interview, after you're done watching it, you run it back. Like you want to see that moment again. And I think it's because interviews are by nature kind of like artificial, especially these sorts of entertainment interviews. They are by their own nature, but those are true and real human moments.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And then when those things shine through in that context, it becomes so special. So that's like sometimes, you know, and Hot Ones has a lot of those moments over the history of the show. And that's kind of like the bullseye with the question where you kind of set it up with the context and then drop a hammer in a way that kind of pierces them and that they didn't expect. And then they can only react to that in a human way because they're just not expecting that, you know? And then that's kind of special when you get those. But Nardwar was like the first person who I ever saw who could just like manufacture those kinds of moments. And they'd be in almost every single episode.
Yeah, man. You know, and I remember that not long after we talked, he gave me some records, like he always gives people records.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went home and sampled the records and made a song with it. and then I like put it out. And it was, I used little clips from the interview and things like that. And he ended up using that song. You know, he has a punk band called The Evaporators.
That's yeah, how started. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And
I know
he was doing interviews just so that he could be on the radio so he could promote his band. So they put out a record and they put that song on it. And so then Nardwar and I became friends. And then I started getting messages from Nardwar. Brother Ali, first of all, he talks like that in real life.
I know.
Brother Ali, I'm going to interview the Chuck D. Can you tell? What can you tell me about the Chuck D? So like, you know, he'll if there That's are other amazing. Artists or other people that are in these networks that like, yeah. this person might be able to tell me something. You know what I mean? And I want to know like who told him some of the stories he knew about me. But so I wonder, like, what is your research process like?
Yeah, yeah.
And what is your, like you mentioned, you know, listening to stuff and watching their movies and things, but what kind of research do you do?
Yeah, so we've ripped that page right out of the playbook. We do that. Like, if we know somebody that's in the circle or on the periphery, we will reach out to them and say, like, you know, like, what you got or something. Or, you know, like, we have some moles who are, you know, maybe like a writer at SNL or whatever. So then if we have someone from the cast, you know, like you just kind of, you work whatever resources you possibly can just because those moments are so good. Mm-hmm. But like on the research too, I should also mention, you know, like I hired my little brother to help out. He gets into the, you know, the profiles, digs deep, puts together a dossier. I'll listen to like every podcast I can, watch every interview I possibly can on YouTube. So then we'll have this information together. I'll read his, I'll see what his blind spots are, what my stuff is, put that all together. And then you can kind of pull maybe like 15 topics about this person's life who would maybe be like interesting wings or interesting sorts of layers of the onion to peel off. Then you start to kind of write out the questions. You cut five of those because there's only 10 wings in a show. And then you put the things that you like in the run of show and then hope for the best. But then I also do think it's important. And I thought it was less important early on. I talked about like watching the movies or whatever. Like before it was just all research. Like I wouldn't really like make myself marinate and everything. And that's changed over the past couple of years. And I now think that that side of it is even more important because as you know, every creative person, every artist, what they're making is a natural expression of who they are. You know what I mean? Like it's that's a natural right. expression of who they are. It's like their yes. body or soul, and it's materialized or crystallized in some way. So when that switch clicked, I was like, well, maybe the more important thing is to actually marinate and experience their art. Maybe that gives you a better sense of who they are than if you watched every interview. So that's kind of why I started doing that. And that's like the research in a package.
It sounds like part of the reason why your questions are so unique when people are just like, that's amazing. Is like you're having your own personal relationship with their art.
Yeah, yeah.
And like bringing like what they've communicated to you, to them. And because it's you and because you're, you know, you're also a unique person as a listener and as an artist yourself, you know, bringing that to them. Yeah, that's really incredible. How many hours do you put into prepping each conversation?
As much as I can. You know, like I love when we're on once a week. Like when we're on once a week, that to me is ideal. And if that were always how it was, I could do this job for 50 years. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's just so it's perfect. It's amazing. And I'm like, I just like it. And we're kind of on that right now, which feels really good. But if, you know, you have a cancellation or this moves or whatever, nobody booked that week or you had the dates out and not, all, there's a million different things that can happen where you can feel like, oh, we were supposed to have 5 shoots this month and now we have 1. And then when that happens, then maybe you have to book up 2 or 3 in a week sometimes to just kind of catch up.
Yeah.
And when that happens, that can be kind of stressful, but it doesn't, you know, that happens, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. And when that happens, then you go back to finals in college. You know what I mean? You just start pulling all nighters and hitting the Red Bull and just trying to make it work and then be like, all right, on Thursday, February 8th, this is all over. And then you just kind of circle that date on the calendar and then you just go to war and just try to execute as much as you can. And then when you're on the other side of it, do something nice for yourself. Like that's how I live.
One of the themes that comes up over and over again on this podcast is therapy, because I'm a firm believer that everybody deserves to have access to a therapist. Doesn't mean that something's wrong with me, although something might be wrong with me, but what it means is that I'm just acknowledging that like every other human being, there's an entire universe going on the inside of thoughts and emotions and narratives and stories and feelings and meaning that I've created around the things that have happened in my life that deserve attention and they deserve intention. These things are deserving of me sitting and just devoting myself to talking through my narratives, to sharing with another person who's a professional and who's just there to serve me. You know, not just talking to a friend who will let me bend their ear sometimes, which is great. That's really important as well. But a person whose job it is to listen and to help me process the things that I'm thinking and to ask me questions that'll just show me my logic and my reasoning from a different perspective. A lot of times we see everything, but we can't see ourselves unless we look in a mirror or unless someone takes a photo of us or unless we do a scan of ourselves. We see everything except for our own faces. We need a reflection in order to see that. And we're able to see so much about other people. Oh, this person's jealous and they won't even admit it. This person is struggling because they don't understand this thing about themselves. And if they could just unlock it, they're so dope. I wish they could just get it. You know what I'm saying? But we can't see ourselves. And a lot of times the things that are most important, we kind of need somebody else to share with us or to just ask us questions to unbreak these log jams. Sometimes I got a story I've been telling myself for 20 years about the way that this particular event went down or this, the way that this relationship ended or, you know, and it, once somebody asks me questions about that, it frees me up to just be with myself in a different way and to have more insight and control into how I live inside my own body of emotions and my own body of thoughts and in the things that have happened inside of my body. I was in my body when all these things happened to me, and my body is also carrying and holding some of that stuff. So I just say all this to say, we all deserve therapy. I don't have a job. I'm self-employed. I've been self-employed for 20-something years. And I live in Turkey where there's not a lot of therapists that speak English. I don't know how to access them. I don't know how to get insurance. So I use BetterHelp to talk to a therapist. And I learned about it on a podcast. And after doing that, we reached out to them to see if we could start a partnership with them. And we have. So if you go to BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/travelers, that'll let you know that we connected you. So you'll get a discount on your first month. And we also get a commission to help the work that we're doing here. And you'll be taken immediately to a questionnaire that asks, why do you want to be in therapy? What are the things that you want to work on? What are the things you want to talk about, whether it's addiction or relationships or trauma or anxiety or depression or all of the things that we're all experiencing on one level or another. None of these things are unique to any one particular person, but these are all the doorways into therapy. And then you'll start talking about what types of therapy you think you might like and what type of therapist you might want to talk to. And then once you choose your therapist, you go to their calendar and you choose the time that works for you. You decide whether you want to text, whether you want to do a voice call, or whether you want to do a video call. And you control it. You make your own appointment every single week. And if things aren't quite lining up with your therapist, you just push a button and you'd go through that process again. You just choose a different therapist. No extra charge, no questions asked. You find the person that works for you, and then you start talking through this stuff. These are trained, licensed therapists from across the country. I've benefited from it tremendously, and I'm really happy to be able to offer betterhelp.com/travelers. One of the things that we've noticed since having a podcast is that, you know, we're independent. And so I want to talk to the people that speak to my heart.
I want to talk to
people, only people that I admire beyond words. Otherwise, it's like, what's the point, you know? And we know that there are certain guests that are going to get higher numbers than others.
Mm-hmm.
But we try not to make our decisions based on that. What's the process like for choosing who you're going to invite to be on the show?
So what we do is, like, basically me, Chris, who I've mentioned, and then there's another woman, a producer on the show named Sarah Honda. It's kind of like that thing where we each have a key, and if two keys go in, then it's like a yes on the person. You know what I mean? But then we also do have this sort of like, you can play a card every once in a while. Like, this is just going to be my like card. Like, I'm just calling it, you know, like maybe like once a season, a couple times a year, like each person with a key can just like kind of do that. That's how it goes. And then it's pretty crazy. Like, we have just like spreadsheets of like, oh, a bajillion different targets. And the last time we pitched them and the stuff they have coming out. And is the trail warm? Is the trail cold? Did we get dates last time? Blah, blah, blah. When's the next time? So it's like this thing that's going. So you're sending all these outgoing personal pitches, trying to get you can. And then as the show's grown and become more popular, the incoming is coming in like crazy too. So then it's like, right, you go every week and you take a look at the names, and then you have to then match this all up with like a schedule of availability. They'll have like, maybe they'll do the interview, but on the condition that it drops on this date because the movie drops the next day. Right. You know, there's a lot of just algorithmic math that you have to kind of figure out when putting together the shows. But then that makes it so it's like the Rubik's Cube almost solves itself. You know what I mean? Because then it's based on opportunity, timing, scheduling, like all of those different things, to where it ends up being just like a Tetris game where it's like, I don't know if like we're walking the dog or the dog's walking us, kind of. You know, it's like, it's almost like the names kind of fall from the sky to like make up a season. And then sometimes, like, we've been super actor heavy lately. So it's like, sometimes you'll be like, ah, that's like six actors in a row. So then like the seventh actor comes in, like, even if they're like somebody we've like wanted to shoot with, then maybe we'll try to go in a different kind of direction. So that's kind of how it all comes together. So I'd like to feel like we have a lot of agency over it, but we kind of don't. Like, it does, each season kind of like naturally shapes itself like a gas filling the room, especially lately with so much incoming, especially with the outgoing or whatever, and us traveling to do the show and all the flights and all the different stuff. So that's more or less how it's gone now. But I thought you said something interesting that I wanted to circle back on, where you were talking about like, I only want to talk to people who sing to my soul. And you know, do you have the same approach to music?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, wired? Is this maybe just how you're wired, I think?
Yes. Yeah. That for people who, and it's the same way with audience. It's like, I don't connect with everybody. I don't even know if I connect with most people, but when I do, it can be really intense and really deep and really, you know, and it's all connection for me, you know. And then sometimes,
and that's what you're chasing. That's what you're chasing.
Always, to me, that's everything to me. Connection is everything. But I do oftentimes, like, there are times where I might be on a like a festival bill with somebody who their work just doesn't speak to me or anything like that. But then when I'm with them, I find like, this person is amazing. And then I'll start to like their music, you know? Right. And I've had that experience from watching people on Nardware and on Hot Ones. Like there are times where I'll see somebody and I'm like, oh, I think, who's the white rapper dude? He sings a lot. He's got tattoos all over his face.
Post Malone?
Yeah. Like when Post Malone first came out, I don't know why. I was just kind of like, probably not for me, you know? And from seeing him over the years, and just seeing like how beautiful and like radiant his energy seems to be, I'm like, man, let me listen to this dude's music again. And it just, it changed the whole thing for me. You know what I mean? So like,
that's a beautiful
now
thing.
I like the
that's
music.
A beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Have you ever had somebody on the show and either you didn't want to have them on from the beginning, obviously without naming names, or
when
they got there, they were just disengaged, not accessible, they just didn't, they phoned it in. It was whack. And what do you do in those moments?
Yeah, so I think like in the, to answer your the first part of your question, it was like a big episode for me was the Shawn Mendes episode, because we never had kind of like a big pop act like that before, who was like kind of hitting on a demo that was younger than ours, you know, like that was just so much younger and so different than ours. But then it like ended up being one of my favorite episodes. And then the time since, you know, like we've shot episodes like Billie Eilish. That was kind of one where I was like, eh, I'm not sure. But then it was like ended up being so right. It ended up working so well. And then I thought like those interviews are unique because it was like kind of catching these pop acts at like an interesting time in their careers, like right before things get crazy. I'll also add the first Post Malone interview to that group as well, like those sorts of things. Then one time I said that very thing to Shawn Mendes when I ran into him one time. He's like, oh my God, that's like exactly how I thought about that interview. It was like my first internet interview of record sort of thing. And like, wow. I was like, that's amazing. So that taught me a good lesson about like not closing the window and painting it shut on a category, because that could be like an amazing category. So that was like a good lesson about a way to rethink things. And then as far as attitudes towards the show, like now it's awesome. Like I love my life. It's kind of like Hot Ones is kind of like Howard Stern, in that when people were doing Howard Stern, they knew they were doing the Howard Stern interview. So they went in with like a different kind of mindset and different temperament than they would in any other person was interviewing them. And that's what I think is now with Hot Ones. Like it's been around enough. People know exactly what they're getting themselves into. They've seen reactions of other people and all the different memes and stuff. So like nothing's taking them by surprise, or they understand the show, or like recognize that it's a big internet show, all of those different things. So they, I feel like, come in to do the Hot Ones interview, you know, like that's a different kind of mindset. So now it's like such a positive experience almost every single time. Like it's just like, it's like a bit, like counterintuitively, it's like a shock. Like its win percentage is bananas now, but early on it was a freak show, and we have this set that's just like black sheets all over the place, you know? And so it looked in like, we can color correct and looks good on camera, but in person, especially in the old days, it'd be like wrinkled black sheets literally hanging from the ceiling. And then you have like me sitting there with my hot sauces and my flight of chicken wings. So
it's
people
like, who is this dude and what the hell is this? And who got me into this? Who's about to get fired for making me do this?
100%. Like I saw so much, like so many times people would walk on set, their faces would drop, and they'd side eye the somebody on the team who was responsible. And that was like such a sad Tears of a Clown era for me as the host of the show, where I'm just sitting there with the wings, like almost apologizing before we've even started. But I also look back on that and I don't have any feeling, like I understand the people who walked in there and side-eyed their publicist. You know what I mean? Like I look back on it, like I get it. Like I get why when they walked on, they were like, this is a setup. What are we doing here? Can we cancel now? You know, like I understand that now. Looking back on it, it must have been so bizarre to like walk in and see. And it really makes me appreciate the rose in the concrete that this show was. But the best example, I think, and you mentioned it earlier, was DJ Khaled. But, you know, that went so off the rails, no connection whatsoever, immediately rejects the whole construct and concept of the show right off the bat. Kind of leaves you as a host to just dangle out in space like an astronaut that didn't tether himself to the space shuttle. You know, you end up in like that kind of a situation. But on the positive side of that, you know, interviews, sometimes they can be like movies. Like the worst ones are actually the best ones. And that's one of those that I'd put in that category.
Absolutely. So you've seen, you've been with so many people, you know, that are like you mentioned, on their way to being part of mainstream culture. Every artist, I think people need to really know that every artist starts out with this idea that, like, I'm probably crazy for trying to do this. And this, it's the same with being in the media space. It's the same with, like, I know this is crazy. I don't know why I think I'm, I don't even know if I think I'm going to make it, but I'm going to try it. And so all of these artists at some point when you're converging with them are at some point in that. And you also have had that. I mean, you've been, you're a solidified part of popular culture in one of the largest ways possible. And so I wonder, you having that vantage point of seeing so many other people go through that and then experiencing it yourself, like, have you learned something about how to do it, how not to do it?
That's a good question. I mean, like, sometimes I think about how delusional I was. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
I think I was young and I was like, duh, like, this is gonna work. You know, like, but when I look back on it now, like, if even knowing what's on the other side, could I go back there and, like, what happens happen? You know, like, I think about, like, how insane of a tightrope walk it was without me knowing I was walking a tightrope. Like, I look back on that, I was like, wow, that was crazy. That was delusional. None of that should have worked at all. And then the next part of your question. So I never think about, like, a brand or, like, build it. I don't think about, like, any of that stuff. But I think if you're going to pursue a creative endeavor as a way to live your life, it would suck, or it'd be so hard to succeed if I didn't like the process of it all.
Right.
It's a work-focused kind of world and work-dominated kind of world, and you have kind of little agency over your schedule. Like, there's a lot of sacrifices that come with it. It might not be worth it if you don't like that whole part of it. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, if you don't like that process of it, I think that the end road here is misery. So if you're going to pursue something like this, do it because you have to. You know
right.
what I mean?
That's
do it
right.
because you have to let it
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise it's going to be almost impossible to succeed, almost impossible to maintain success. And yeah. I think the end game there is just misery anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, and I've seen a number of people in my cohort, we kind of started out a lot like punk rock, you know what I mean? Where it's like, I'm going to do this because I love it. And I'm just going to connect with the other people that love listening to it. And it's not about ever becoming part of anybody's industry. And there are some of us that really meant that. There are some of us that never had the opportunity to be in the industry. It's like, you know, your talent speaks to such a specific group of people that don't worry about it. It's easy to sell your soul if nobody offers to buy it. You know, and then there were some of us, I think Atmosphere to me is the greatest example of, like, MTV was literally like, please let us make you the next Eminem. And he just was like, nah, I'm cool.
Interesting.
I don't feel like it. Nope, says that sounds kind of corny. Don't feel like it. Sounds like you're in control instead of me. So he, you know, they just didn't do it. I mean, Rick Rubin took them out for lunch and they were just like, yeah. Ant from the producer for Atmosphere said, man, I just wanted to say Rick Rubin bought me lunch. And they got up and left. And he wanted to produce their next record. And Slug was just like, Ant produces the Atmosphere records, but thanks.
Wow.
But for a lot
That's
of us,
awesome.
What
I
noticed is that there are certain parts that we opt out of. You know what I mean? So there's certain things that I just don't do. And there are certain things that Aesop Rock just doesn't do. And there are certain things, even somebody like Black Thought is like, yeah, I don't do that part. And so there's some acknowledgement there that some of the elements of this aren't worth it to me. To be more famous or to be more well known or to
be.
Yeah,
right.
It's just like, right. I'm going to do the parts that I love and whatever comes from that is going to be worth it to me.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. Like, I'm so comfortable in this whole thing and I like that there's a show that has stakes, you know, like that's exciting, you know, to have something that has stakes and it's awesome and I'm so appreciative of it. But it's like, I don't need it to get any bigger. You know, like, I'm not in some sort of growth obsession. You know what I mean? There's no like world takeover plan. like, as long as I can do 36 interviews a year, I'm happy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and then when you are in contact with people who do make that sacrifice, there are those sacrifices, whether it's with their integrity or their time or whatever, you realize, like, I don't think these people are happier than me.
No. Yeah. No, I agree on, and like, for anyone that doubts, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, man, you spend enough time with it. Some of the most wildly successful people I know are some of the people I'm most worried about in my whole life. Like, there are people 100%. That I literally, like, check in on them, like, hey, are you good? You okay? And if they don't answer, I'm asking people around them, hey, is so-and-so good? And this is a person, yeah, these are people, yeah, who are wildly successful. So
it doesn't, it snaps anything into focus. You just end up, everything actually just gets cranked up more. You know what I mean? So if you're already like an anxious person or a paranoid person or a depressed person or any of those things, like, everything gets jacked up.
But almost everybody, no matter how amazing your situation is, you know, you're in an amazing band or something like that, but you're like, man, deep down, like, I kind of want to do a thing where it's just me and a banjo and a drum machine. You know what I'm saying? I imagine that you also have somewhere in your mind, you're like, man, maybe if this thing ever slows down, or maybe if I get maybe if I can get a little break from this, I'll go do this other thing. Do you have stuff like that kicking around?
You know, it's funny that you like brought up TRL, because like, sometimes I think about a kind of like Carson Daly parallel with me, you know, and like Hot Ones is kind of like my TRL moment, you know, this like sort of breakthrough shooting star in the constellation of pop culture that kind of came out of nowhere. But then he like went from TRL to like that show at 1 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he went from that sort of big, yes, huge thing to then cable middle of the night. You know what I mean? And I kind of like that move next. You know, I kind of like taking the weight off of you and going into something where the expectations and the stakes are just a little bit less. You know, like, sometimes I think about that side of it. And I'm not ready to do that now. Like, I love everything about what's going on now, but I think about, you know, a hyper specific like Big Ten basketball podcast or something. You know what I mean? Like, I think about like stepping away, or like some sort of like true crime podcast with like a food component. You know, like I end up with these sorts of like back of my head ideas are just like so chill. You know what I mean? So those are the things, but none of those things are like very serious for me. I think that they're just sort of daydream fantasies that go through my head when everything else is so loud in my ear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was amazing too, to see Carson Daly in those two. Like, I was never going to be on TRL, but I was on the late night one, and his questions, yeah, like, that's when I was in a heavy activist phase. And he asked me, how do you be an activist and an artist and not have your activism become a performance? And I was like, oh, okay, Carson. That's a really, like, man, that's an amazing question. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But then the other thing that I think is like amazing about his career, and the other thing that I admire, is that he was able to age with his audience. It's like, he didn't have to like be young and TRL-ish forever. Yes. He could kind of naturally go from like the kids that were watching TRL in junior high and high school, he could go to this like middle of the night kind of like college dorm setting, like more grown up talk show. And then now, you know, he's on the Today Show now, you know what I mean? So it's like, he's aged like completely through with his audience in like such a dignified and smooth way. And I don't think enough people talk about it. So sometimes, like, if my agent asks me like, oh, like, how do you see it? Or like, how do you envision it? Or how do you want it? Like, I always think about Carson Daly, and then like, yeah, pivoting to then what is sort of like the late night, sort of like smaller audience, like fewer expectations interview show that's next. I wouldn't have some sort of expectation for it that like, oh, the next thing's got to be bigger and crazier and better than Hot Ones. Like, I definitely don't want to be in that mindset. I'm just like following the star of Carson with that one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing to see like so many people with their careers go in that direction. You know what I mean? You see somebody been doing it for a long time and doing stadium rock or something like that. And then after a while, man, I want to do something that feels like an indie band. Like the people that reach those heights, there's something in them that they're always longing to get back to a time when it felt very real and it felt very connected. And they were certain that everybody is here for the right intention on a heart level. They all yearn 100. For that.
Yep, yep.
Like everybody yearns for that when they get big. Man, I just appreciate you so much, man. You've been so generous. I got 100 other things that I want to ask you, but especially after you saying that you want to be respectful of people's time, man. I'm really happy to connect with you and talk to you. And I just thank you, man. Seeing Hot Ones become successful reminds me of seeing LP become successful after all these years with Run the Jewels. Because I've known people that also have switched up. I've known people that have, you see in their face, like, I'm going to be famous. Forget all this indie stuff. And some of them try and it works, and some of them try and it doesn't work. And for LP to stick to his guns and to become, you know, truly successful, just being who he's always been and staying true to himself. And that's what I feel about your thing. And now that me and Brendan are doing this podcast, there's times where, like, man, I really search for, like, who is out there just connecting with people on something human and beautiful and something that connects us all. Like, just who's out there celebrating common humanity and actually becoming successful doing it? So, man, it really means a lot. Along with being entertaining, man, you're giving me a lot of hope.
All right. Well, thank you. And if I could return volley here just a little bit, I appreciate everything that you said. And sometimes I think, like, one of the most amazing things about my life is the way that it's kind of reflected back at me now. And it's kind of so surreal to be meeting you and to be talking to you. And I remember all the shows and all the times we went down and saw you, and we saw Atmosphere, and we saw Idea and Abilities, and we saw MF Doom, and all of those different shows.
Were you at the Doom show at the Abbey?
Yeah, I was at that Doom show at the Abbey.
Oh, man. BK was DJing for me.
Yeah.
And when they started, that was my first night with Doom, and they, at the end of my set, people were saying, Doom. I had never played with them before live, and I was like, is somebody booing me? And BK was like, no, they're saying Doom. That's how they say that they're ready for Doom. I'm like, oh, okay, all right.
Cool. Yeah, so all of those things are like just such amazing memories and such important parts of my life. And if art is a natural expression of who you are, then it's art meeting you, because I feel like my life's reflected back at me in so many different ways. And a really fun conversation. So I hope you enjoy podcasting. You're good at it.
Man, you are somebody that I really see as, like, I'm aspiring to get to the place where you are.
All love, man. All love.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for doing this, man.
Yeah. I appreciate the conversation. Really nice to meet you.
Peace. Special thanks to Sean Evans for being so generous with his time and with his insight and wisdom and his story and just with himself. He mentioned that he just came from a shoot. And I mean, Sean sits and talks to people repeatedly, constantly. So for him to come on this show just as a favor to us, because I was curious and I wanted to connect with him and share that conversation, he came and gave of his time. And we're just very, very grateful. Go to brotherali.com. and sign the mailing list and go to the join section and get down with the caravan. There are all sorts of exclusive and rare things that are in that area that you can't find anywhere else. We also have really dope podcast merch with the logo for this podcast that was designed by my man Mark from Medina Hip Hop. Shout out to him, who did this incredible series of stamps. He started with Chuck D from Public Enemy, who said, I'm ready, hype plus I'm amped. Most of my heroes don't appear on no stamp. And so Mark from Medina Hip Hop made a stamp with Chuck D on it and presented it to him a long time ago. And then he proceeded to make a whole series of those. There's Lauryn Hill and MF Doom and Biz Markie. Go and check out Medina Hip Hop. There's some really beautiful stuff there that he's done as a tribute to the great ones in this culture. And he made a stamp of your brother here. And that's our logo for the podcast. So much love to him. Shout out to my man Ant from Atmosphere, who did the beat, the music for the Travelers podcast, which is the song The Travelers from our 2009 album that we made together called Us. You can go and check that song out, check that album out. All of our stuff is up and streaming everywhere. Check out BK1, who's the producer of this podcast. He has super dope hip hop projects that he produced. One of them is called Radio de Canabal. That's full of Brazilian inspired production with some of the greatest hip hop legends rapping on it. One of his projects is called Bones and Beaker, which is super dope pop singer songwriter music that he made. Really incredible. Check all of that stuff out. Much love to Mansoor Panawala, to Emna Mirza. Shout out to Darian Washington. Shout out to all the people that listen to this show and give me feedback on it. Ahmed Fahmi and Jamal and Aida Rashid and Imam Khalis Rashad. And shout out to all the people in the caravan. We appreciate you all greatly. We'll be back here next week, inshallah. We love you. We appreciate you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.